Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
This is Radio City Talk.
If you're involved in an event, drop me an email, mick@radiocity.co.uk. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk. If you type Mental Health Monday podcast into any Google search, you will find that the podcast itself comes up. There's 30-odd episodes of it now. Thank you to everybody who shares their stories, some from organisations, some from charities. Some, as we'll hear, are from politicians and people like that. Others are just normal people telling their mental health stories, and those are the ones we find really hit home with people. So if you want to get involved, mick@radiocity.co.uk. Going to touch on mental health funding now on the programme. This is something, of course, which is a major, major issue and will go a long way eventually, hopefully, to solving some of the mental health problems as long as the right money goes to the right places. And that's what we're going to touch on now with a Liverpool MP who's been taking a look at the figures around mental health and mental health funding through what we call CCGs. Let's get the full story.
Radio City Talks Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
There's another aspect to mental health which we're going to touch on now, and it follows on from a Freedom of Information request by the Wavertree MP, Luciana Berger. She joins us in the studio now. Luciana, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me, Mick.
Freedom of Information request. Now, you've done this for a number of years.
I have.
And these are related to CCGs. Now, can you just explain? So, clinical commissioning groups are the bodies who decide what provisions, medical provisions, where the budgets are spent, right?
Well,
In layman's terms,
there are 209 clinical commissioning groups across England, and they are tasked with spending money given to them by the Department of Health. However, much of the money that comes from the Department of Health has certain requirements attached to it, has certain targets. There are very strict NHS business rules about how money should be spent. So the government is able to inform and direct how that money is allocated by local areas.
Okay, so the NHS England planning guidance that came through states that all CCGs are required to increase their spend on mental health by at least as much as their overall budget increase.
Yes.
So that is the NHS England planning guidance.
Indeed, but it's just guidance. So whereas some elements of NHS money that comes from central government has very strict rules within it, this was in the guidance that every clinical commissioning group should allocate more of a proportion of their spend towards mental health.
Okay, so what did your Freedom of Information request discover?
So I, for the last 4 years, have had to write to every one of the 209 clinical commissioning groups to find out exactly how much they are spending on mental health. And I've had to do that because the coalition government scrapped the annual survey of investment in mental health. Now, we can have a whole debate about why they might have done that a few years ago, but that's the situation. So I've had to write to them all individually. And what my collation of all the data, and it's an incredibly time-consuming piece of work, and you've got, I hope, attached to that the data set which captures all the information. What it shows is that half of all areas across the country are reducing their proportion of spend on mental health, and in fact only six of them are increasing that proportion by 1% or more.
So there's also a difference depending on where you are. There's a range, I think, of 11%, a shift.
Indeed, yes.
in funding as well. It's an 11% range, but actually it's bigger than that because some are spending 5%. Some are spending up to, is it 16%?
Indeed.
Is the highest. We're talking about percentages there. When that comes down to actual cash,
It can be millions of pounds, yes.
Now, in terms of that, are those CCGs for you being... what would the word be? Are they spending their money in the wrong way? Are they failing to heed the guidance from NHS England's planning teams? Are they doing something wrong in spending the money this way?
I think the challenge is that for our whole National Health Service, there are incredible pressures. You know, I'm very, very sympathetic to the challenges that people face right across our country. For those clinicians on the front line, for those patients trying to access services, it's very, 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 very difficult. However, there are certain constraints and certain rules that come with the money that areas receive. So, for example, there are very strict rules from what's called business rules, they're called. I don't like using the word business when it comes to our National Health Service, but that's the formal term for them. There's very strict business rules about how much surplus our local health areas must keep behind, and that has a big impact on how services can be delivered. There's very, very strict rules about how much can be spent on various elements of physical health. And therefore, it's no surprise that when there's no rules attached to how local areas spend their money on mental health, that it falls down the priority list. I don't blame them. Who I blame is the government for keep on telling us that their one barometer of whether they're achieving equality for mental health is whether or not local areas are increasing their proportion of spend on mental health. And what I've shown now for the fourth year running is that they are not delivering in any way, shape or form on the very, very, I think, meagre target that they've set themselves.
Now, the Health and Social Care Act of 2012 was where the phrase parity of esteem was introduced.
Indeed.
And actually, there's nothing in the law that says they have to spend this money. But then what is the value in that phrase being contained within that piece of legislation if it doesn't play out in the way that you're talking about it, if it doesn't play out in people actually spending the money, in that it doesn't play out in mental health provision being a set-aside, designated amount that CCGs must spend? It's not parity of esteem.
It's not.
Advisable, you know, if you fancy spending your money in this way, spend your money in this way. That's not parity of esteem.
It's not. And as I said, you know, the idea that asking local areas just to increase their proportion of spend by a little bit is somehow achieving equality for mental health. Again, that's a whole big debate and discussion, but I would put forward that that certainly isn't achieving equality for mental health. However, that's a target the government have set themselves. They're not delivering on it in any way, shape or form. And, you know, it's just there's as many issues contained within it that mean that in all our areas, ultimately, this is about patients and about people not being able to access the services that they need.
I mean, what's the value in the Health and Social Care Act in 2012, which says there should be parity of esteem, when there's not parity of esteem?
Well, it's worth me just sharing with you the background about parity of esteem. So it's this kind of fancy phrase, which essentially means equality for mental health. And the Health and Social Care Act was put forward by the Coalition with the Conservatives as the majority player in that proposal. My constituents will know, and people will know, that Labour MPs as a whole voted against the Health and Social Care Act. We didn't believe that we should see this multi-billion pound reorganisation of our NHS, which cost so much money, which no one knew about and no one voted for. However, the one thing that we did put forward as an amendment to the Health and Social Care Act was this idea of equality for mental health. And it was actually my colleagues in the House of Lords that put this idea forward. Now, the only reason that is written into law is because on the day, a few Liberal Democrat members of the House of Lords decided to support the Labour amendment. It wasn't decided in advance and it just kind of happened. It's worth putting on record that the Conservative members of the House of Lords voted against this amendment. They did not want parity of esteem or equality for mental health, but it passed because of the support of Lib Dem peers at that time in 2011. And I have been saying on many, many occasions, as much as people will listen, that as you rightly put forward, it's a meaningless phrase within the Health and Social Care Act. We are in no way, shape or form in any way closer to achieving equality for mental health. We're talking about it so much more, and it's largely thanks to programmes like your own Mental Health Monday, and congratulations on your fantastic nomination for the Mind Media Awards. But we're talking about it more, and that's really important. We're breaking down the stigma and the taboos. That's really, really to be welcomed, but that's not being matched in any way, shape or form by adequate support services. And today we're just talking about what happens within our National Health Service. I'm actually very, very concerned more broadly about what happens outside our NHS, what happens in our communities and what happens in our places of learning to keep people well.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. So were there any mitigating factors that you heard from any CCGs that meant that, well, we're spending less, but actually it's because our provision on mental health services within local council funding is better? Were there any models that you saw which said, well, actually, you can reduce the spend there if there is supplementary support coming from somewhere else?
No.
Right.
In one word.
I was trying to be optimistic then.
No, but we also know that right across the country that local authorities have been cut left, right and centre, including our own here in Liverpool, that has had such a drastic cut, over £350 million since 2010, which means those services that used to be provided to support people in our communities, to keep people well, things like youth services, things like children's centres. We've still got our children's centres, but we don't have the same level of service that we had previously. Things like befriending services for the elderly to contend with things like loneliness. our crisis centres, our drop-in centres. You know, we used to have six here in Liverpool, now we've got one. And that's because of the cuts to our local government allocation and the government taking out the waiting for deprivation, which means core cities like our own have been hit harder than most. So it's a double whammy that things that used to be provided, leisure services, outdoor spaces, things that, again, you know, much cheaper in comparison, actually, things that kept people well don't exist. And then the services themselves are being increasingly squeezed under pressure, staff finding it very, very difficult. And ultimately, my concern first and foremost for patients, they're the ones that really are struggling to get appointments, to get support, to be seen earlier on. And then it's no surprise we're seeing more people in a crisis.
Luciana Berger, the Wavertree MP, joining us on the programme. One in four girls aged 14 suffer from depression, 24%. When we spoke to the author of that study, Luciana, she says that actually when you look at people from deprived backgrounds, closer to one in three.
Yeah.
One in three girls growing up in poorer backgrounds with depression, with mental health problems as well. That's concerning, isn't it? Because, you know, mental health problems can affect different people from different walks of life. But when we're talking about children and we've seen a trend which shows that you are more likely if you come from a poorer background, that feeds into that idea that this is a much bigger thing than what the CCG spend will be on mental health. This is about society, isn't it?
It's about lots of different things. And the report that's come out today from the University of Liverpool, supported by the National Children's Bureau, is really, really important to shine a spotlight on young people's mental health. And this is an area that, again, I'm really, really worried about, because we know that if we don't support young people earlier on and actually tackle things when people are teenagers, that actually affects them long into adult life again. So we should be doing everything possible to support the next generation and younger people. And these results are really, really concerning. And particularly this health inequality aspect of it, this issue that, as you said, if you, know, you come from a poorer background, you're more likely to be affected. That's because you're living in a household that's contending with really stressful situations like debt, like issues around in some parts of the country now where we're moving towards universal credit. I was with the organisation Gingerbread last week that supports single parents, and hearing went over to the Wirral and met single mums from across our region to hear firsthand the pressures and strains that they are under, doing their very best to provide for their children. But it's no surprise when they're being hammered on their universal credit or their job seekers allowance or whatever it may be, and they're trying their very best to provide for their child, that our young people are facing those stresses and strains. It's about housing, it's about in-work poverty as well. You know, lots of my constituents really struggling because they're on zero-hour contracts jobs, and that has an impact on their children too.
Luciana, any word from Jeremy Hunt? Has he responded to your Freedom of Information request?
Well, yes, the Department of Health has put out a response. They haven't in any way denied the fact that the data I've collected shows that the government for the fourth year running is not meeting their target. They've pointed to the fact that by 2020-2021, they expect and hope to expand the mental health workforce by 21,000. Obviously, that's 4 years away. I'd point out that we've seen cuts in the meantime. We've actually lost over 7,000 people working in mental health since 2010. So there's only a part replacement of what we've lost already. And they say that investment's going in. Well, we've heard time and time again, pledges of, we've had big sums of money, over £1 billion. But they need to actually show where this is actually going, because it kind of goes into the system and it's like goes into the ether. And then my evidence shows that it doesn't actually reach the front line. So it's all very well saying this money goes in. Actually, it's being siphoned off to pay for other parts of the NHS. It's not that I'm unsympathetic to that. But ultimately, if they want to really achieve equality for mental health, they have to ring fence budgets. It's not a big ask. They have to ensure that the money for mental health actually reaches mental health. And that's not happening at the moment. And they don't deny it.
Ring fencing of budgets. I'm sure it's something we'll come back to. Luciana Berger, thank you for your time.
Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. Tackling the stigma.
Just a date for the diaries, though, for me and producer Lizzie. November the 13th, we've got some good news here at Mental Health Monday that have been nominated as the Journalist of the Year in the Mind Media Awards. So they have an awards due every November to celebrate people talking about mental health in the media, and in the Journalist of the Year category is myself. So thank you very much to producer Lizzie for all the hard work on the show so far, and we'll continue to be hopefully sharing stories as well. So a big thanks from me to everybody who's taken part in Mental Health Monday. Some people were like, are you going to be able to sustain it? Are you going to find plenty of people to talk about it? Absolutely yes we are, and we will continue to do so. Fingers crossed for the 13th of November. It's quite a tough category. So I think just to be nominated is a good thing. We'll say no more than that. But thank you to everybody who's contributed to the show so far. Right, date for the diaries. And this is all about the Liverpool Mental Health Festival. It is upon us. And it says here, bigger, better and more inclusive than ever before. I'm very pleased to say from the Liverpool Mental Health Consortium, we've got Claire Stevens in the studio. Claire, it's great to see you. Thank you for your time.
Hello, Mick. Nice to be back again. And congratulations on the nomination.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And thank you for playing your part as well in the programme as well. It's always great to have local organisations who are happy to come on and talk about mental health. I like that you're saying it's big, bigger, better and more inclusive than ever before. Because maybe next year you might go, a little bit smaller than last year. We're just dialing it down a little bit. No, you're turning up the volume. That's good to see.
We've turned up the volume, although next year we don't know because of funding cuts right across the city. It's a really vital time at the moment that we do something to celebrate people's mental well-being. So we're talking about mental health here just as much as we are mental distress.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us, what are the headline? If it was Glastonbury, we'd be talking about the headline acts. So what are the headline acts for the Mental Health Festival?
Right, we can't quite rival Glastonbury in terms of headline acts. But we've got loads of things coming up. We've got about 50 events going on over 2 weeks. So it starts on this Sunday, the 1st, and it goes on till the 14th of October. There's all kinds going on. Certainly get down to Williamson Square on Saturday the 7th of October. We're going to be there all day from 10 till 6. We've got stalls, food, we've got musical acts, dance. The Wirral Roller Derby will be there. They were a great hit last year. So we've got that happening on the 7th. You can find out all sorts of information about where you can go for help and support, but you can also be entertained and have a good time. And that's really the message of the whole festival. And also come along to the finale, which is on this Saturday, the 14th of October at Blackburn House. That's going to be 6 to 8pm. And there's going to be fire acts and drumming. And people can sort of have a go and do some stuff, not with fire. We can't let the public loose with fire for health and safety reasons. But there'll be all sorts of opportunities to do a bit of juggling and movement and dance and stuff like that.
Well, so. Great. If you ever fancy doing some fire swallowing, come down. Clair workshop. Maybe for next year.
Yeah, we're still working on that one.
Yeah, the insurance comes at a premium, I think, with that kind of thing as well. When you have these festivals, obviously there's a message of mental health and there's the positivity that comes with getting involved in an event, trying a little bit of dance or trying a bit of food that you wouldn't normally try and all those kinds of things as well. But at the same time, you're also trying to provide people with the information because there's a need for information that if this is something which might affect you, when you go back to your home or your bedroom, wherever it might be, you might then think, right, how do I move forward with this one? How do you strike that balance?
Exactly. Well, what we try to do is we put on the events are free, so you know anyone is welcome to come along. So we try to do something that's fun and that raises people's spirits because that's good for all of us. But while we're at the events, then it's an opportunity to talk to people one to one, and people we find in previous years do confide in us and ask where can I go for help. This year we've also put together not just a brochure which you can get from us, and I'll tell you details about that later, but. It lists all the events, so there's about 50 events in there. But in the other side of the brochure, it's like a directory of where you can go for support. So it's well worth getting hold of one of those brochures, and they're across the city, but also online at our website. So that's www.liverpoolmentalhealth.org/festival, and you can find the whole information there.
What I like about it as well is, of course, it because some people who feel uncomfortable maybe with their own idea of being in public with or suggesting they had a mental health issues is with like this, you can go and you can take part whether or not you've got a mental health issue or not. And when you get there, people aren't going to be pointing and staring and going, oh, you must be here because there's something, you know, deep down wrong with you. Actually, with this, you can come and get involved. You can pick up a brochure, and then the other side of the brochure might be very useful to some people. Other people might disregard and think, well, I don't really need it. But that's fine.
Exactly. It's useful and you can keep it in your back pocket. It's the right size. So it's really easy as a reference tool and you can pass it on to people that you know. And all of us, as you know very well, Mick, all of us either have our own mental health problems or we know someone who does in our family or amongst our friendship group. It's a very, very common issue and something that we all need to be talking about more and sort of keeping in the public eye. And as you say, you don't have to have any sort of diagnosis or anything like that to come along, but it's about making sure that we all keep as well as we can and prevent ourselves from becoming mentally unwell.
You see, more than 50 events.
It's about 50.
That's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just tell us about the kind of spaces that you've got, some that are outdoor. Tell us about the indoor spaces. Who's on board with you?
So we're working a lot with the Brink. We've got a comedy night coming up at 81 Renshaw Street on Sunday evening with Liverpool Comedy Festival. That should be good. 7 till 10, that's 81 Renshaw Street. The art exhibition we have every year is going to be at the Brink. That's starting again on Sunday, but it goes right up until January. We've got a really high standard of work that's been submitted for that this year, so do come along and see that. St Bride's Church are working with us for the first time this year. We've got a conference there on next Monday, a week today, on sexuality, gender, faith and mental health, so that should be quite an interesting one. Fact are doing a film night for us again, and we've got Donnie Darko on there on the 3rd of October, plus some films made by local people about their own sort of experiences with mental health. Central Library and the Museum of Liverpool are going to be hosting workshop Wednesday for us, next Wednesday. So there's a chance to come along to workshops about yoga, mindfulness, BME, mental health, mindful writing, singing, music, all sorts of things going on there. And you can sign up online to get a free place on those.
You're everywhere.
We're everywhere. The Magnet and Melotone are working with us to do an open mic night. We've got a poetry slam, which I'm really looking forward to. It's called Lunatic Fringe. And it's that's going to be at the Brink as well on the 12th of October. So all kinds of events right across venues in the city.
Brilliant stuff. It's the Liverpool Mental Health Festival starting on Sunday, the 1st of October, running for a couple of weeks after that one. Claire Stevens with us in the studio here on Mental Health Monday. I'm fascinated now by the choice of Donnie Darko. So who came up with the idea of showing Donnie Darko?
It might have been me. I don't know. It could have been me.
Tell us, because it's a film which a lot of people will have seen. What was it about that film, or what is it that you think that's a good film to show as part of a festival?
Well, the character of Donnie Darko, I think people, ever since the film came out, have been arguing as to what's going on with him.
I was going to say, because a lot of people watched the film and went, what on earth was all that about?
Yeah. So has he got some sort of a mental health problem? He's seeing a big rabbit a lot. There's an aeroplane crash that's going on in there. How much of it's going on in his head? How much of it is real? How much is he reacting to a trauma that he's had? These are things that a lot of us go through, maybe not in the same way as it is in the film, but where the sort of perceptions of what's real and what isn't are confusing, and we don't really know if what we are seeing as reality is reality, and what does reality mean anyway?
So will there be a chance to kind of discuss some of those ideas after the film?
We can certainly stick around in the cafe, in fact, afterwards and have a chat about that, yeah.
I think that's a good one, because Donnie Darko is often one of those where you go, so that bit where that thing where he, did he hurt? Yeah, and yeah. But it is absolutely one of those films. What a great choice for the...
It has the song, of course, Mad World in it.
No, absolutely, as well. So there's loads of stuff happening. The Poetry Slam, tell us about the Lunatic Fringe Poetry Slam. The phrase Lunatic Fringe might sit not so well with some people. Other people might laugh along.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've been on this programme before talking about some of the language we use around mental health and how it can be used in a derogatory sense, or it can be something that we can reclaim and go, well, if people want to call us lunatics, then that's okay. I mean, in a similar sort of way to gay pride and the way that people reclaim words that are used against them. So I think what we're trying to do there is just say it's okay to celebrate the fact that we don't always feel great mentally, and sometimes that can be a source of our creativity. So people find it really a useful way to express themselves through coming down, standing up, saying their poetry and talking about how they feel and being sort of validated for doing that. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Brilliant stuff. In terms of the festival as well, I mean, when you got wind of various funding cuts as well, I think people could have absolutely understood, Clive, you'd have gone, you know what, we can't do what we used to be able to do. It's time to not shut up shop, but really pull things right back and try and think of a smarter way of doing things. I guess you're always trying to think of those things. But with this, you're still going, right, well, we're out and about. We're going to be in all these major venues. We're getting involved in all these different types of things. We're not holding back. But funding is still a major issue for you.
Funding's a huge issue. We've had our own funding cut by 75% this year. So we don't know whether we'll still be here next year. And part of the thinking behind this is, well, if we're going to have to go out, let's go out in a blaze of glory. But also, I think the festival allows us opportunities to come on shows like this, to get some media coverage, to reach a much wider audience than we do throughout the rest of the year, and to put the information out there to say, if you're struggling, here's where you can get some help. There are still organisations in the city that can provide that help for you, despite the fact that there's cuts. And we really need to make sure we do all we can to keep ourselves well, because resources are shrinking. So I think this is a time when we should be doing exactly this.
Will you be having collection buckets and things like that at these types of events so people are aware that you guys have organised this festival and it's there because you guys are here and you guys are here because of funding and that funding is not always easy to come by?
Yeah, people can certainly donate and people, ever since they've known that the festival was on, has been sort of contacting us and saying, how can we support you, which is great. And yes, of course, we'll take donations. And it all goes towards putting on the festival and sort of defraying the cost of the festival. So, you know, none of that goes directly to us. It all goes towards putting the festival on.
86 people in Liverpool experience mental distress of some kind. Is that over the course of a year? Is that over the course of a lifetime? Or
86,000.
Yeah. Sorry, forgive me. 86.
I was going to say. Yeah. Liverpool's doing better than I thought. Yeah, 86,000. That's probably at any one time.
At any one time, 86. Which, if you think about it, is the equivalent of everybody who goes to Anfield on one day and Everton, and then goes to Everton at Goodison the next day, almost combined. You're looking at that kind of figure. And if you look to them, individual men, women and children, that's a lot of people, isn't it? 86,000.
It is a lot of people. And that's people who we know about or who are sort of coming forward for support. But I think there's an awful lot more who are just sort of getting on with it and sort of not wanting to ask for help or not knowing where to go.
Yeah, and it's interesting actually because 56,000 suggestion of those are not currently in touch with services. So there's 30,000 people there doing absolutely the right thing. And actually, I think that's a high number in its own regard of people who are on a particular pathway, but a greater number still who are still either looking for the right pathway or unaware that those pathways are ever going to be available to them.
Exactly. And you're right that it's good that so many people are coming forward. And I think part of what you're doing on this programme and part of what we're trying to do through the festival is to almost normalise the fact that mental distress exists and that we all experience it at one time or another, just like we all get the flu at one time or another. You know, it's quite a normal thing and it's okay to talk about. And the more we talk about it, the more successful we are at reaching the people who need the help and the support.
So the festival is on the way, 1st of October. Just throw three events at us if people want to use them as the linchpin moments over the course of the festival. You've got 2 weeks' worth of the Liverpool Mental Health Festival. Give us a few more examples of where people can go and see something a little bit different.
Okay, well, the Unity Theatre have got involved with us this year for the first time, so they're putting on a whole load of events, so it's worth checking those out. We've got the comedian Sophie Hagen is our patron this year, along with Bill Ryder-Jones and the Singh Twins. So she's doing a show at the Unity on World Mental Health Day itself, the 10th of October. I think the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Partnership, CAMHS Partnership, are doing a load of work as well. So check them out at YPASS and NYA. And yeah, come down to the comedy night on Sunday at 81 Renshaw Street. Come along to the workshops on Workshop Wednesday. Drama in Development, that's an interesting one as well, at the Brink. Three local writers on the 5th of October, 7 till 10pm, will be sort of reading from work that they're working on at the moment, developing plays, and there'll be a discussion with the audience on that.
Fantastic stuff. You mentioned the website before. Mention it again, and we'll put it on our social media as well so people can find it nice and easy.
Yeah, it's liverpoolmentalhealth.org/festival, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter, and it's Liverpool MHC.
Liverpool MHC. We'll get that up on our social media as well. We are at Radio City Talk. Claire, thank you for your time. Always great to speak to you. We'll see you hopefully over the course of the festival as well, some of those events. Liverpool Mental Health Festival back in 2017. Bigger, better and more inclusive than ever before. You're with Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk.
Radio City Talks Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.